Mr. Hay, Reel 11. You come really now to the end of your time in the Middle East, in Palestine. How did you feel when you first got news you were going back to Italy, or were you expecting it?
Well, we were expecting it, and it was quite a relief, really, to find we were going back to Italy rather than go and face the second front with new dimensions, as it were. We knew Italy, and it wasn't bad fighting in Italy.
You felt the second front would be worse. What?
Well, new commanders, new chiefs, new everything. In soldiering, you get a comfortable feeling about something. It's not always pleasant, but you know the people about you. You know your commanders. You get to know the German habits, what to expect, particularly with their Nebel weapons, the 8-barreled mortar, those sort of things. And if you're going to have to fight, you may as well go in knowing something about what to expect.
Now, you'd left your original gear in Italy when you came to the Middle East. What happened this time when you left Palestine?
Well, we were supposed to be refurbished in the Middle East. And the stuff we got was not really up to date. It wasn't very good at what other people had, and it had been reconditioned. But we weren't fitted up with completely new weapons or that sort of thing. And of course, we had taken in a lot of reinforcements, particularly. The first of the anti-aircraft units that had been disbanded, we got some of the officers and some of the men to make up, and they had been. This is one of the reasons we were training in Syria, to get them used to.
What impression did they make on you, these new drafts from the anti-aircraft units?
Well, they were all good soldiers, as soldiers, but of course we weren't to know. Well, we should have realised they hadn't that battle experience, call it battle craft, where these chaps know how to look out themselves when they've been through a few things, they know when to keep their heads down. And so these new people, as we found out, weren't used to battle experience.
Do you remember the ship you travelled on?
Sobieski.
Again?
Yes.
And where did you land in Italy?
Was it Toronto?
You've got a note of Naples.
Oh, yes, at that time we came into Naples, that's right.
And what do you recall of the of getting back to Italy, landing there, and the first moves?
Well, we got to know we were to take part in a big offensive with the intention of breaking through the enemy's Adriatic defences and entering the valley of the Po and getting on up towards northern Italy. But we knew that there was this Gothic line, which was the winter defence of the Germans, which they were going to hold.
Now, there's a variety of things that you were doing to prepare. I think first you went to, I'm not sure how you said, San Secondo. And there's two things you were doing there. One is was the field firing exercises and checking the weapons and the vehicles. This was all part of getting ready, I presume.
Yes, this was well away from the front line. This was down in the south of Italy. And we were having exercises.
What kind of things were you doing?
Well, it was mostly testing out, I think, the object was to find out that these guns we were having would fire, and also integrating the new reinforcements. They weren't recruits, they were reinforcements. Because they were soldiers, trained soldiers, but they hadn't been used to infantry work.
So it was a continuation of what had gone on in Syria, really. And then you moved up to the divisional concentration area, which I think was Bastardo. You'd landed in very early July. This was sort of around about the 12th of July. What was the divisional concentration area like? I mean, what was going on in?
Well, the great thing was that there had to be secrecy about our movements. The army commander was said to be full of confidence. The overall plan was to attack through the more hilly country with unchecked momentum, break through the prepared defences of the Gothic line, which stretched right from the eastern coast to the western coast, going over the mountains. Accordingly, our division was tucked away in the numerous dips and hollows of the ruling country around Sasso Ferrato, which was very pleasant country, very pleasant weather, and no signs of a major battle about to take place. The journey northwards had to be made at nights, without any lights, and this was successfully completed by the 23rd of August. But the great thing was there had to be secrecy about this great concentration, which was to go up the western side of Italy, by which time had rejoined the 8th Army, rather than being in the 5th Army, which was on the eastern side, the Americans.
Now, while you were moving up, it was a sort of long process, the moving up, I think. Some of the points that... you were in the advance... Were you in the advance party at one point?
Yes.
What did that entail?
Oh, just preparing the way and seeing that when the troops or the traffic did move, they knew where to go, and it meant appointing... Well, mainly the military police to guide them, because they hadn't to hang around. They had to get concealed. You know, this was the height of summer, bright sunlight, and any German spotted planes would sense the movement of troops because of the dust coming up. And we hadn't been very careful, so traffic was... There was a restriction on the speed limits, anything, not to raise dust or let the enemy have any idea that we were concentrating on the western side.
About what speed would you have to travel then to stop the dust?
I think it would be about 15 miles an hour. But it required 3 days, so there was no racing, no getting there quickly.
What about how were the troops concealed in areas? I mean, were they under canvas or...?
No. We avoided the canvas because they can be spotted easily. We had to get to where there were orange groves or that sort of thing. I mean, there's a lot of foliage around down on the lower slopes of the mountains, and so there's plenty of places to get concealed. So you just, during the day, you got under these trees, we're in the among the vines and all that. They just have to be concealed during the day.
Just some other points, but I believe you spent some time with the tanks, company commanders, because you were now a company commander, weren't you?
Yes. Well, they were up in the line near Assisi, and we went up there, spent some time with them just to get to know them. Mostly, I think I lot with the North Irish Force. But anyhow, we got to know them, and they got to know us, and I wouldn't say we could make any plans, but it was just to get to know them, because obviously when tanks are coming forward, they've got to know you, aren't you? You've got to have your own way of signalling.
Do you remember what it was?
The signalling? No, it certainly wasn't tapping on the side. They were observant. But no, I don't think they had any particular.
Another point was that that on August 7th, 8th, there was a grand fete. Was that a battalion fete?
Yes.
What did it entail? What was going on?
All sorts of we knew it was the last party, so they decorated jeeps and greyhound. Some of them, two of the officers managed to get women's clothing, and there was a. But anyhow, stupid things, but just having a good time. We had one to minor races and things. It was just a party. If normal civilians had seen us, they would have gone stupid. But it was just relaxing before the big.
And I believe that a football competition that A Company won, were you playing?
No, I didn't play. I wasn't. Yes, there were always, wherever we went, a football would appear and you'd find someone to play, even if you brought them a few miles from there. But they were always glad to come and we were glad to go and play. We'd play anyway. So, football, yes.
Now, you mentioned something about Oliver Leese, the 8th Army commander, visited on the 15th of August. What do you remember of the impressions that visit made on you?
Yes. So I think I had met him somewhere before. Yes, I think we were all quite impressed with him. He would say, "Now, there are my plans. Have you any questions?" And nobody dared ask a question. But that sort of man, he was talking to us, not at us.
Right. After that, on August 22nd, you left Bastardo and moved up to Isola di Fano. And that's really when the offensive begins. What do you recall? Could you take us through what happened, sort of day by day almost?
We were still quite away from the Gothic line, and the only troops on our right was an Italian brigade, which were the only ones between us and the Germans. I think they were put there to keep the Germans busy and not pay them too much attention, thinking that they were only going to be against Italians. And then we had to move up quietly. We had a small engagement about 10 miles short of the Gothic line, and I remember one of it must have been an old group, because we were in this room, no windows, and a shell just hit the window ledge, and whilst nobody was injured, we all got covered in rubbish. But it let us know that we had really started. And we were involved in a small engagement, lost a few casualties, I remember.
What happened? Do you remember now?
Well, we were waiting till it was at night.
Was this at the Solo del Piano?
Yes.
That would be the 27th of August.
Yes. And we were just waiting to go up and assembly. We'd been brought up by trucks because we'd had quite a distance to come. And we were just waiting. There was a small river to cross, and a solitary shell came first amongst us, so we had two or three casualties then. But it just reawakened us that we were now in the war zone again. We hadn't been in a war zone for a long time. And so this waking us up, and again, another shell hit this building. So the enemy knew something was going on, otherwise they wouldn't have been ranging on us, and we wondered if the game had been blown, but nothing else much happened, and we just went on advancing towards the Gothic line. We were still 10 miles short, and we got a little way, and then we had, I think, 3 days rest, just quietly keeping our presence quiet. And then came the advance to the Gothic line itself, and we weren't to be leading troops. I think the foresters were ahead of us. When we got into the open, I'm saying the open, when we saw the actual Gothic line country, it seemed to go up in three huge steps, and we still we were going to climb and climb. And when we got over up almost the first step, could see how neatly all the trees had been cut, how they were lying down, and the place was open. Prior to this, of course, we had our maps, the aerial photographs given to us, and there were a lot of minefields which were could be discerned on these photographs. By the time we went forward, the foresters had done a good job on the first assault. One of our leading companies got caught on a minefield and they suffered quite a number of casualties. I think that was C Company. We didn't suffer any casualties and we got through the minefield.
Was this advancing onto Petriano?
Our next objective was Petriano, and one company was detached to take over a small village on the right.
That would be Monte Grosso.
Monte Grosso. There was a huge hill which dominated our line of advance, and we couldn't see what was behind that, because obviously you were trying to pick out where the main German defences were. They were highly organised. They had, of course, they had a lot of time to prepare this. Their Todd organisation had built concrete emplacements. They had tanks that were sunk into these emplacements, so you couldn't really pick them up with nicely camouflaged. They had fields of fire for their small arms. And here we were in broad daylight, marching up towards these defences and having to wait to see what would happen next, where it was coming from. We didn't seem to have a great deal of supporting gunfire at that stage.
Where were the tanks?
There were no signs of any tanks that we trained with. And we're waiting to see where these tanks are. It wasn't too difficult country for them, for all those steep slopes. Tanks could have got up. And so we're going on without any support. We didn't have too many casualties. As I said, the main work had been done by the foresters. So the first Germans that had been taken prisoner, or they had been captured. And I say, it's still broad daylight, and we called the CO, called a halt at one stage. As I say, he, on our right, we could, which was the Hampshire Brigade, which was all very clear. The Hampshires were having a great battle, and I was surprised that Colonel Walrow dispatched one of our companies, because we were getting ready for the next attack, he dispatched one of our companies to help the, to support the Hampshires, which I thought.
Which company was that? Was that
the C Company?
That was the one you mentioned earlier.
Yes. He dispatched that, so we reduced to three rifle companies. I didn't see anything of our support company with its carriers. We were taking over from the foresters and moving where there were a few houses, which most of the houses had been demolished for lines of fire, but there were one or two had been left for the use of the soldiers, the German soldiers. So we're moving from house to house for cover. And there was my company, and we seemed to be on our own. B Company was on our left. And I think D Company had again been dispatched to help the foresters on the help the Leicesters, who were then taking over on the left. And so we were down to two companies. And I was expecting that the thing is for us to attack. Anyhow, we advanced and we got to a little cemetery, which gave a little protection. So the CO came forward said, I want you to take that those buildings, which happened to be a place called Mondiano, was in the distance about, a mile and a half. And so I said, well, what is the plan? Where are the tanks? And he said, oh, they'll be coming. So I said, well, we'll wait till we get some support. And I said, what about the artillery fire? He said, that will be coming. And then he went away. And so we were having a war. We advanced a bit further, and we took some prisoners. I was very surprised to see we'd taken some Italian prisoners, because they still had the feathers on their hatches. But these had been part of the brigade on our right, who had been taken prisoner by the Germans earlier, and they were very glad to be released. So, and they were very happy to be sent to the rear, taking these German prisoners. Well, there weren't that many of them, 20 to 30, I think. So we were then waiting for our next support, and I got, this was about just after midday, I got a message from the CO that we're to advance immediately.
On Mondiano.
On Mondiano. And I said, well, what about the support? I can't see any support. And he said, that will be coming, so we waited a while, and nothing came. And then he ordered me. He said, the general said, you must advance. He said, you must advance immediately.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I thought it was absolutely stupid. In the broad daylight, the Leicesters on our left had not taken their objective, and they were still heavily engaged, plus one of our companies, and we were in a bowl. The Hampshires on the right had taken their objective. Our C company was too far away to give us any support, and I wasn't in charge of them. And we had to go for this Mondiano.
So this is after the capture of Petriano. This is later on. A couple of days later, I think it is, according to your notes.
Yes. And so we all had, this was, and I was threatened.
In what way?
I assumed I'd get court-martialed if I didn't. This is entirely unknown to me. A commander threatening. I said, well, this is suicide. And he said, the general said, you must, or you'll be in some sort of trouble. I don't know what the words were, but so.
Who did you blame for this? I mean, did you blame the general, or did you blame your colonel, or? Why was that?
Because earlier, when we were moving up, there were various people, the gunner officer, an engineer, said, where's your CO? We're part of his group, we haven't seen him. And so that was disorganized. But these things come to you later. But they say, well, these chaps have got themselves lost. But in an order group, you've got to have the gunner with you. So you get out your targets. And the engineer, well, he's just part of the advance group, but there were no signs of any tanks. And we trained with the tanks for this. So we advanced over this open country. There were one or two vines to shield us a bit.
What orders did you give to you? Was it just A company, or were you taking B company forward?
I was just on my own, entirely on my own.
A company attack.
Yes.
And what orders did you give?
Well, I had two new officers with me, Lieutenant Marshall and Lieutenant Hood. We'd lost an officer, Lieutenant Smith, lost him. He'd been wounded in that earlier little action. So I was left with two commanders of platoons and a sergeant. I can't remember one sergeant. And so I said, well, I give Lieutenant Marshall some buildings just short of Mondiano, which was up on the top. There were several buildings, Mondiano, but in a very open position. And There were small buildings on our right, and where I gave that bullet to Lieutenant Hood, and I brought up the 3rd platoon with my company headquarters.
Did your officers object, or did did they recognise what you'd recognise, that it was a bad...
When I discussed it with them, I said, well, this is it. We've got to go, yes, no trouble. We advanced across this open space, and we hadn't gone very far. There was a road just underneath Mondial. Not much of a road, but... they were going forward to these lower buildings on Mount Dino, and they were immediately under machine gun fire coming from the right. Over, I should have mentioned that I told the colonel when we were looking at this target, he said, our friends the Leicesters are there. I said, colonel, the Germans. I said, look. He said, no, there are friends to mess. I said, he used it. There are friends to mess. I said, they're Germans. They haven't taken it yet. They're still fighting. And this was his first mistake that I thought, Germany, we're in trouble here. And so we advanced in the face of knowing that these chaps could see us. And they just turned their machine guns on. Tim Marshall got quite a few of his platoon across the road to the 3rd buildings. Hood got to the buildings on the right, and I was following up. And when I saw Marshall's platoon in trouble, I took this 3rd platoon to support them. But the casualties were alarming.
From the machine gun fire or from artillery?
Machine gun fire. No artillery. No artillery fire. Machine gun fire.
From the right.
The Gothic line had been prepared especially for this. They had their lines of fire, their machine gun was set, and it was just chaos as far as getting people forward. So I got forward. I was going to tell Marshall. I said, where's Mr. Marshall? I said, he's down there. By the time the Marshall had been killed. So I said, get out to the right to the other buildings. And I got quite a few of them out, and we got into the buildings on our right. And we rested up, counted the cost, we tended the casualties, but we lost almost a platoon, and Marshall had been killed. So we, again, I looked at the situation, still no support, no sign of attacks. Oh, my wireless set had been knocked out by that stage, so I was almost glad not to have a word with this colonel. So we reassembled, and I got Hood to go around to the right behind these buildings, and we were going to attack from the side. And I think by that time there were only one good platoon, which is the one I had taken over. And just as we're getting to Mondino, two aircraft from the Desert Air Force came in quick succession and each dropped a bomb on what we were going for, which was super. But I'm quite sure Hood, who'd already got on part of his target, lost his casualties, and I didn't see Lieutenant Hood again. All right, this is, we got onto our objective, and we settled in the building. But meanwhile, we were still under fire from these machine guns on our left.
On your right, I thought it was.
No, the machine guns were coming from our left. The right was clear because the Hampshires had.
Sorry, I understand.
The Hampshires had got it. C Company, who were watching all this, had no orders, and when I saw Major Mitchell later, I said, you know, he said, we had orders to stay there and you are far too far for us to give you any small arms fire. We had nothing else. So that was that story which I came back after Vernon. Anyhow, I thought we can't do anything more here. Reinforcements.
Was this the outskirts of Mundanao then?
Yes.
You couldn't get into the village proper?
No, we were in the first building where the first bomb had hit. And of course, there were still Germans in there, in various forms of wounded and so on, which we hadn't time to look at. But this bomb had really done quite a lot of damage.